Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. When you build a better business, you're building a better life as a small firm architect. Get noticed, sign more projects, make more money, live a happier life with less stress and more support. Entree Architect Academy is opening for enrollment this September 2016. To learn more and to join our early bird mailing list, visit entrearchitect.com/academy. This is the best of Entree Architect podcast. Welcome back to the Entree Architect podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, whether you're in the process of launching a startup, or you might be an experienced small firm architect just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to August 2016. This month at Entree Architect, we are focusing on the category of personal development. And in honor of developing myself personally, I'm spending this month away from the podcast and working on me. And you know me, I'll probably also be working behind the scenes, taking things here at Entree Architect to the next level for you. So this month, I encourage you to take this month to be self-centered, centered on yourself. Dedicate some time to building a better you and enjoy the best of Entree Architect podcast. This week on Entree Architect podcast, I invite Jared Perry, the founder of Pavin.com, a new online platform for architects and engineers, to discuss how he used technology to leverage a powerful idea for predictable revenue. This episode of the Entree Architect podcast is sponsored by FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, and track your time. Learn more at freshbooks.com/architect. Jared Perry, welcome to Entree Architect podcast.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. This is going to be an interesting conversation. You and I spoke a little bit offline. I learned a little bit about what you were doing, and I was so excited about it. I wanted to get it on the podcast here and share it with my audience. You are a professional engineer based in Westlake, Ohio. You're a co-founder and principal at Sixmo Incorporated, which is an architecture and engineering firm. And you're the founder of a new online platform designed to support growth and competition in the AE industry called Pavin at Pavin.com. So that's a really interesting story, and I'd like to hear about that. But before we get into Pavin and Sixmo, I want to hear more about you. I want to hear about your origin story and where you came from, what inspired you to become an engineer and find your way to where you are today.
Yeah, so I grew up in Southeast Ohio in a little town called Marietta. My dad actually was a bridge inspector for the Ohio Department of Transportation. And I can remember being probably, 13 or 14 years old. And there was a bridge being built that connected the west side of Marietta to the east side. And basically, I was walking across the old bridge and I could see, my dad on that bridge inspecting rebar and things like that. And that's where I thought the idea was cool. It wasn't really till probably my junior or senior year in high school until my dad said, you can make a living with your brain or your back. And that really kind of set the tone for me that I wanted to do it with my brain. And, I've always been interested in building things and how they go together, very type A. And that really set my path going forward to be an engineer. I'm not very creative. If it were me, everything would be squares and rectangles. But I like working with the other creative minds, things that I couldn't think of, and then finding ways to make them not fall down, essentially. That's the structural engineer's motto.
Yeah, it takes a team, without a doubt. You would love what's happening here in New York. Right now, I live in Westchester County, New York, about 40 minutes north of New York City, and they're building the new New York Bridge that spans the Hudson River.
Oh, wow.
The current Tappan Zee Bridge is way beyond its lifespan, and they're building a beautiful, it's not super beautiful, but it's a really interesting project. It's about four times bigger than the existing bridge. And we're watching it. We cross the river, at least three or four times a week to visit family. And we're watching this thing be built right in front of us. It is an amazing sight to see. And I'm looking forward to trying to find somebody who will take me on the tour.
There you go. And
get up close. So I could definitely see how you could be inspired by bridges and your dad being inspecting those and being in that world. So where did you go to school, and sort of what led you to starting your own firm?
So I went to school at Ohio University in Athens, Ohio, which is, it's a county that's adjacent to where I grew up in Washington County, Ohio. And I started out in the civil engineering program, originally thinking I was going to do transportation. That was kind of where I did some internships at ODOT and thought, I wanted to be a transportation engineer. But, as you matriculate through your undergrad and you get towards the last 2 years, you have to make a decision of what you want to specialize in. And it was between that and structural. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it was because I had better grades in structural than I did transportation or what. I just found it more interesting. Buildings became more of a passion for me rather than bridges and seeing things go up. And when you're driving around, construction is something that's, unanimous. Wherever you go, you're going to see things go up. And no matter if you're in the architecture or engineering industry, you look at it. You're in awe of it. So, that's kind of what I wanted to necessarily, I didn't want to hang my hat on and say, oh, look at what I've done. But I did want to be a part of it.
Yeah, I love that idea of architects and structural engineers and their world goes up. And civil
exactly.
engineers go out.
Yeah,
it's very interesting. I never thought of it that way. So what did you do once you left Ohio
or
the university?
Yeah, my first job out of school was actually in Cleveland, Ohio. My then girlfriend, now wife, was in dental school at Case Western. So I moved to be closer to her and worked for a mid-size. Big E, little A firm in Cleveland that basically did heavy industrial buildings, steel mills, power plants, that sort of thing. And then my career for the next 5-6 years was nonstop industrial. The job that we had right out of college was a huge titanium mill in Martinsville, Virginia that, was still having the final touches on it, when I left to start my own business. And, I would say that I'm very fortunate to have had that job because I learned a lot. The mentors there were amazing. But also at the time, you know, that was in 2006, 2007, 2008, leading right into a big recession, and, you know, was gainfully employed there. You know, the titanium industry did not fall because they had a big contract, you know, and they had to get this facility online. So that was a big boon for me as a, you know, an intern structural engineer right out of college.
How long does it take to design and build a titanium mill?
You know, and that project was a design build. Gosh, it was under design when I came in. We just did the preliminary foundation packages in December. I started in May or June. And we were designing as they were building for 2 years, you know, and we were working, you know, packages were going out. The structural portion, you know, after a certain, after a certain time period, it's everything they've forgotten about. You know, I want to get to this valve, you know, so I got to build a platform over here, or, you know, or this base plate wasn't fabricated correctly, so we need to come up with a check. But for the most part, I would say 2 years, 2 to 3 years, but the HVAC, mechanical, getting equipment from overseas and, you know, coordinating all those efforts. It would, like I said, it was still going on when I left.
Yeah, I can imagine that it's a massive project. So so once you left that firm, where did you go?
So at that firm, I met a guy by the name of Pat Thornton, and he is my business partner at Sixmo, co-founder of Sixmo. And he is an architect, you know, master plans examiner, certified building official. He's got his business card literally has to be longer to put all of his titles behind his name. But, you know, we worked together for about 5 years, sat next to each other, became good friends. Our wives became good friends. And, you know, we just said, you know, why not? Why shouldn't we start this? You know, why shouldn't we do this? And that really just, you know, led to one thing or the other. And, you know, here we are. We started in 2013, January 1, incorporated the business, and have been fortunate enough and blessed enough to have it grow 400%, you know, roughly each year we've been in business. And 2016 is looking up as well.
What type of work do you do at Sixmo?
So the architecture department primarily focuses on aquatic facilities for either private or public sector. They also do, lately, I would say in the last year or two, microbreweries are just popping up everywhere. I mean, everywhere I go, there's, oh, you got to try this microbrew, you got to try this IPA. The microbrew industry in Cleveland, we just finished one. We are almost finishing another one. And we've got proposals out for probably like three or four more. So that industry, we're kind of developing a niche market in the microbrewery industry from an architecture standpoint, which is really cool, you know, because it's someplace you can go when you're done. You know, if you build a titanium mill, they're not just going to let you walk around when you're done. So it's really cool. We actually have happy hours at the other one right down the street from us called Sibling Revelry Brewery. In Westlake, and you know, we'll have a Friday night happy hour there. They have food trucks. It's pretty nice. But structurally, we deal a lot in what I call commercial and commercial retail. We have a couple office buildings. We have a lot of what I will call light industrial, because I've been around heavy industrial to know enough what we're doing is not heavy industrial. We did have early on, and I write about this on our About Us page on Pavin, a very big project, a titanium mill, smaller and different than the one that I started out with in my career. But, you know, that was heavy industrial, and that took about, you know, almost a year and a half to fully come to closure. But most of our business right now is in the commercial retail, and then, you know, what I would call shell buildings for the most part.
When you say aquatic buildings, what that is, that pools?
Pools, yep. So water parks for municipalities, for private residences, for hospitality industry, that sort of market is where they get it. We actually had which is nice because you get to be the first one down the slide.
You got to test it, right?
Yeah, exactly. But we just had one in our neighboring community, Avon, Ohio, and that was a really cool experience. You know, I'm not much being in the commercial private sector. I don't deal a lot in the public realm. So going to council meetings and that was watching Pat basically do his thing. That was pretty cool.
And how many people do you have working at Sixmo?
We are up to 12.
So,
right
you,
now.
So you started in 2013 with two?
Correct.
And grew to 12 in 3 years.
Yeah, and the brunt of our growth in the beginning was in the structural department. You know, one of the things, you know, and the other thing I didn't mention, Pat is going to hate me for saying this, but, you know, when we started Sixmo, I was 27, he was 39. So, and he went to Kent State. So you have this kind of guy that's been around. All of his buddies are architects, and, you know, at the age of 39 or 40, you're moving your way up the corporate ladder. So, you know, we got into meetings that, you know, maybe an intro firm wouldn't have necessarily got themselves into. But, you know, structurally, we got ourselves that meeting because of his connection. So, you know, the bulk of our growth early on was structural. And probably in the last year, we've doubled the size of the architecture department. So multidiscipline jobs. And that's just like any business, you know, the more credibility, the more portfolio you have to show people this is what we've done, you know, that just helps you grow your own brand.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about launching and starting and how did you grow so quickly? Talking with you and seeing you here online, you can see that you're a young guy. Mm. And so I started my firm when I was 29 and I was young. And so 27... To start a firm as a young guy, and so I wanted to hear that story. So that's interesting. So the strategy was to sort of team up with somebody who has some more experience and more connections, and use your strengths to grow quickly.
Absolutely, and you know he's not a millennial. I am, you know, and I'm big into these generational type tendencies. And you know Pat's the seller. He likes that. I'm very not into that, you know, and the dynamic of our work environment here, it plays to that. You know, he knows what I'm good at. I know what he's good at. He knows what I'm bad at. I know what he's bad at. And we piggyback on each other. And the thing I would, if anybody is listening and thinking, oh, should I, you know, have a partner? Should I, you know, different age range? The answer is yes. I'd highly recommend it, but don't be afraid to delegate. You know, the task that you know, look, I'm not good at this. I want to help, but I'm not good at this. So, you know, if you're going to be the face when you go to this meeting, here's what you need to say. You know, here's what we want to get across. Here's the things they're going to be looking for. Because you're absolutely right. I do, you know, for the time being, appear young, but... I'm getting more gray hair.
Enjoy it while you can. Yeah. My 29 years was yesterday in my mind.
But I actually remember going to a meeting. We started the business, and I was dropping off. We were getting a mechanical engineering subconsultant for a job, and I was going to drop the drawings off on a CD so that he could take a look at them and work up a quote. And at the end of the, you know, kind of, I don't know, interaction, if you will, he told me to have a good weekend and be a good boy. It felt like I was getting patted on the head, you know, and I didn't take anything out because the guy is he's a great guy, and I know he didn't mean anything by it, and that stuff doesn't bother me, but you're absolutely right. That is the perception that when you start a business that young, that's absolutely what everybody is going to think. And you find ways to work that to your advantage. You know, I used to tell people I'd go into meetings and a lot of people say, don't do this. You should never do this. I put my cell phone right on the table. And I make a point to talk about that cell phone and to say, what's your common complaint, you know, with the millennial generation? It's these cell phones right here. These cell phones annoy you. But I have it on me at all times, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday night, wherever, on vacation. You know, I was answering, my wife and I took a trip to Paris and last year, the year and a half ago, and I'm answering work emails over there. So that's part of my generation. You know, we don't turn it off. And I think that's for our growing and evolving industry, that's a real positive as people in decision-making positions transition from baby boomers to millennials or, you know, some area in between, that's going to make a huge difference. Gen Xers, I think that's what those are called in between.
Yep, that would be me. Yep. Don't forget us. Let's take a quick break here to say thank you to FreshBooks for their support as a platform sponsor of Entree Architect, because as a platform sponsor, FreshBooks has provided funding and support for our overall mission here at Entree Architect. They recognize the need for small firms like us to build better businesses in order to be better architects. FreshBooks is the easy-to-use accounting software designed to help us small firm owners get organized, save time, and get paid faster. It takes care of invoicing, expense tracking, estimating, reporting, and it all happens out on the cloud, so you have access to your information from anywhere that you have access to the internet. And I use FreshBooks for my own small firm, Five Cat Studio, and my favorite feature of the FreshBooks software is sending my invoices by email and allowing my clients to pay by credit card. When FreshBooks says that you'll get paid faster, they're not kidding. With the convenience of clicking a button and paying by credit card, many of my clients pay now as soon as they receive their invoice. And for those clients who don't pay right away, FreshBooks automatically sends them a reminder of the balance due at an interval that I set. So once I send an invoice, I can go back to being an architect, and I don't need to chase down any of my clients. And Tim Lee of FreshBooks will show you how easy it is to send invoices by email on our exclusive video series Tim and I produced exclusively for the Entree Architect community. Check out this free video series at entrearchitect.com/FreshBooksVideo. There's no catch. There's no email. It's completely free. Just go to entrearchitect.com/FreshBooksVideo and you will get the videos right away. There's three of them. Shows you everything you need to know about getting started. And then go to FreshBooks.com/Architect and sign up for your free 30-day trial and give it a try. It's free. I suggest you just send one invoice and see what happens. That's how I got started. Just send one invoice to one client and see how it works. And when I did that and I got paid much faster than usual, I signed up for the rest of it and I set up my whole account in FreshBooks. FreshBooks.com/architect for your free 30-day trial. And be sure to enter Entree Architect into How Did You Hear About Us? You started Sixmo, and you're growing really quickly, and things are going well. And you had this idea to create this new platform called Paven. Can you talk about what this platform is and what it does?
Yeah. So the whole idea behind it, you know, kind of give you the why I did it. I like predictable things. The engineer in me likes predictable outcomes, and part of being a small business owner that I would never have even ventured to look into when I started an AE firm was predictable backlog, predictable revenue, just understanding what cash flow is and how that affects my day to day, how it affects how I sleep at night. You know, when it was just Pat and I, it was, you know, okay, we don't have the money this month, we're just not going to pay each other. Then you have that first employee, and it's like, wow, okay. Now this person is depending on me. And then you meet her husband and you're like, this guy is depending on me. And then you add another and another and another, and it kind of builds to this, you know, how am I going to feed this lion that just constantly, payroll is there, as you know, and it's, you know, it's 75% of our the money going out of the bank each month for us. So I want to build as much predictable revenue as I can. And that's really where Paven kind of said, you know, I would love to just be able to log online, pick jobs that I'm good at in markets that I'm good at, you know, commercial, retail. You know, I would love to ramp up the heavy industrial market, but my young face, I think, is playing against me there. But, you know, it would be nice to have that capability. And that's really where Paven came from. And then it evolved into this this apples-to-apples bidding platform that just wasn't available beforehand. You know, hiding identities so that you're, you know, you don't know who the company is. You just know their credentials. You know their resume. Don't judge them on what they look like, what age they might be, what friends they might have. You know, look at their portfolio. These are the past projects they've done. These are the clarifications that they've put in their proposal. And you can, you know, if you've been in this business at all and you're reading the questions, you can read an RFI and say, this person just doesn't get it. Or this person absolutely understands. What a great question, you know. And you can, those actually play a part into your selection process. So, you know, Paven in a nutshell is for the consulting industry, predictable and reliable backlog. And for the owner, it's a way to find the most qualified firm, to not be restrained by your geographic location. And pick the things that are most important to you: schedule, proximity, job site, size of firm, limitations of liability insurance. I mean, we have a pretty in-depth profile creation, and you're able to rank and weight based on all of those criteria so that you get, you know, the most qualified firm. Not necessarily the best priced, you know, unless that's your number one criteria, which being in business for 4 years now, I'm telling you, that's not it. I've lost several bids being 20 to 30% under people, being 10% under people, 5%. It's, you know, they want to see a lot more than just that.
So walk me through a typical process on the architect engineer side and how it works.
So if somebody logs into paven.com, P-A-E-V-E-N, I've been getting that a lot. You'll be prompted to immediately right now sign up and join the wait list. When a site goes live, you will then be asked to create a profile. That profile will have your company background, your business development contact, your credentials, what languages you speak, what percent in market you are. And anybody who runs a business knows this because you have to fill that out to get your liability insurance. And you kind of say, well, I'm 10% commercial, I'm 10% industrial, I'm, you know, 30% warehousing or whatever the case may be. And then you move on to licensures. So in order to finish your profile as a consultant, you got to prove that you're licensed. And then we go through an auditing process on our end to confirm that the people are who they say they are. And then at the end, you will you'll go through a terms and conditions that basically there's an ethical conduct policy in there. I mean, it's really geared more to be a tool than it is a glitz and glamour or bells and whistles type software. After that, after you've been created and put into the system, you have the ability to search for RFPs. You can filter based on your discipline, your geographic location, where you are licensed in. You can filter based on market. The owners have more search capabilities, I guess, than the consultants do, because really that's all you need. But that's kind of the process to find a project, if you will. And once you find it, you are allowed to view what's called a detailed RFP screen. That RFP screen is going to allow you to view any RFIs and download the RFP so that you can view it and determine whether or not you would like to place a bid. Now, having said that, if the owner restricts that RFP with a confidentiality agreement, you cannot view it. You literally have to sign and accept the confidentiality agreement as they have put it in there, so that there's a control of documentation, and the owner themselves then get a list of here's who's touched this, and they've signed and accepted all the terms and conditions that I've placed on viewing these documents. After you've accepted that, you, like I said, you can review and bid. You can ask RFIs up until a certain date that the owner will dictate. And then when you'll get clarifications from the owner, just like you would anything else. It's just a centralized place for it. And it goes on the detailed RFP screen, all of the RFIs. This way, the owner's not getting inundated with the same question. You know, we get that a lot. You know, some of our questions won't be answered when you've got multiple people bidding, because they'll say, you know, somebody else already asked this question, see this page, so on and so forth. After that's all completed, it's time to bid. You'll put your bid in there, you know, your cost, your schedule. I think there's an hourly rate in there if the owner so selects to review based on that. And then you hit submit. You're not legally binded or obligated to this. There's no, we did not want to have that control because so many things happen in the AE industry and in the construction industry where projects may die or whatever. So it's basically, this is what I'm going to do this job for. The owner, as soon as the RFP deadline has passed, the owner will get a notification that your bids are in. You know, click here to view. All of the bidders, so say there's 20 bidders. This is where architects and engineers will love this. You will immediately be notified based on the preliminary selection criteria that the owner has put into the system. So if they ranked schedule first, proximity to job site second, cost third, limitations of liability insurance or representative projects, you know, in that order, and then they gave a rank of, you know, 60, 20, 10, 5, 5, or something like that, you would be weighted, your bid would be weighted in accordance with their selection criteria. And then you would be given an email calculating up saying, you know, out of 20 bidders, you finished 5th out of 20 in schedule. You finished 8th out of 20 in proximity to job site. You finished 1st in cost. You finished, you know, and the list goes on. And then we will calculate based on their weight and their selection criteria what your percentage is to win this job, which is something, you know, I want to know. That's the predictable revenue part. You know, if I look at that and I get it, you know, it says I got a 17% chance of winning that job, I'm marking it off. You know, I'm not putting that high in my backlog. I'm going to then move on to the next one, you know. But if I got an 85 or 75% chance, odds are, you know, I like my chances in there when people are comparing me apples to apples. After that, the owner has 2 weeks to make a decision. At that point, they can ask for an extension, you know, if they want to. Everybody will be notified of that extension. If they want to award the bid, they can do that through the system, and we have what's called a pass the baton email, where we introduce, you know, once the award bid happens on the owner's side, introducing the consultant to the owner. That was the first time they'll get a formal introduction. And then that's kind of where the consultant would take the rest of it offline. You know, that's an architect or an engineer moving completely through the site. The owner or RFP lister is a little different. You know, obviously you can put the RFP on there, but you have the ability to invite people you already work with to bid on, so that it's not just going to, you know, on the open market and you don't know what you're getting. You can invite people to bid on it that you already work with every day anyway, and just use this to evaluate them to ensure you're getting the best schedule, the best price, the closest person in this proximity, that sort of thing. And then you have the waiting factor that I mentioned earlier.
Very, very interesting. So, what was your inspiration for putting all this effort and time and money into putting this platform together?
It really came when we started to grow. We had about 3 employees, and that titanium mill I talked about earlier, that was coming in and it just hadn't launched yet, you know, and we were waiting. That was going to tie up a lot of our resources, being a smaller firm. And we were up to 5 then. And you know, I just, how much do I sell? How much do I not sell? What do I chase? What do I not chase? You know, how aggressive do I want to be? Every business goes through this, you know, in a consulting industry, that is, you know, where your prices are based on what you think you can do the job for, and then where you think your competitors are going to be, what do you think the job is worth? You know, you're weighing all these things as you're pricing proposals. And sometimes if you got a good backlog, you make the decision, well, if I'm going to get it, you know, I'm going to get a good price for it. And you know, we'll find a way to figure it out. You know, if you're very aggressive and you don't have a lot of backlog, you tend to go on the leaner side. You know, we'll do it at cost, or we'll do it for, you know, 5% or whatever the case may be. So all of these decisions happen on the small business owner side, and the, you know, the big businesses for that matter. But, you know, we were in a situation where, you know, I just want to pursue things, you know, passively, because I'm a structural engineer, and that is what I want to do. I want to do structural engineering. I don't want to have to go out, knock on people's doors. I enjoy doing happy hours or, you know, meet and greets, but, you know, I don't like selling people something. And that's, I don't know that anybody likes being sold something, for that matter. So, and that's really where we've kind of came up with this platform. That was the inspiration for it.
The reason I asked you to be on the show is because there are many architects and many engineers that are out there who listen to this show, who have these ideas, who have this inspiration to create a platform online or to create a physical product, and they don't know where to start. So when you came up with this idea, I mean, how did you get to where it is now? Right now, it's a site it's not fully launched, but it's in testing mode. It's going to be launched very soon. It's a beautiful site, paven.com, paeven.com. I definitely recommend everybody going on and checking it out. How did you get there? I mean, you're not a programmer, right?
No.
Already admitted you're not a designer.
That's exactly
so,
right.
So how did you put together such a beautiful site and that does all of those things that you wanted to do?
So when we first started out, I mean, I just wrote down, you know, when I was running, and I use Google Keep, there's a plug for them. As I'm running, as I come up with ideas, I just say them, and then it kind of records it, and then you can go back to it. And when I came up with the idea, I had, you know, it should do this, it should do this, it should not do this. And I recommend highly, if you are married and thinking about starting your own business, you get a sign off from your significant other. I don't think
that
I would have
good advice.
Yeah, I don't think that I would have been afforded the opportunity to chase this dream if Sixmo wasn't already successful, you know, because this is, and the great, when we talk about starting a business and what you need for startup funds, it's completely different. Starting an AE firm, much easier to bootstrap than it is building a business like Paven. But, you know, from start to finish, wrote down everything in a Word document and sent it. I had a few friends just from my network of people that I knew, you know, oh, you're a computer programmer, you know, what do you think about this idea? You know, how much would this cost me? Who would you recommend? You know, I went through it, you know, starting out from what I would call a good old boy network type environment. And then that grew to evaluating people, marketing firms, you know, all online and reading reviews and doing the whole analytical engineering type approach, you know. But, you know, we ended up finding a firm here in Cleveland that just, they spoke my language. I mean, we use Scrum in-house as our project management delivery method for architecture and engineering projects, which is completely different than probably 99.9% of the other AE firms out there. And that came from the computer coding background, you know, building applications and software. And so I was speaking their language, they were speaking mine, and they knew what I wanted, they knew what it would look like. I mean, they're responsible for the design, the interior, the guts, the simplicity, and I stress it is meant to be simple. It is so hard to design something that is simple and clean rather than just giving everybody everything they want and yeah, cluttering it, and, you know, just, you don't know how to use it because it's so beautiful, but, you know, it's just... that was really difficult, and they did a great job. And then the team that we have here at Sixmo that's working on, you know, different pieces and parts of it, because I don't know how to use Adobe at all. We have great Photoshop and Illustrator and Dreamweaver and Audition people here that just, you know, they wear a lot of hats and they're very talented.
And so you had the idea, you documented that idea in a narrative, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you found a team to put it together. So you found a team that's local, said, here's what I want. They came back with some graphics visually first?
So what they call them wireframes, and they basically will say, here's what it could look like. And then they put together, once you sign off, you know, they'll put together a scope of work, you know, very similar to what we do. And, you know, you could do that lump sum or you could do it time and materials. But yeah, essentially that's exactly the way it went down. And then from there, we built out, you break everything down into a task that is, you know, it could be a 15-minute task, it could be a 25-minute task. They're very, very detailed. And the way they have like a service ticketing system that will, you know, once you test it, you know, then they'll put it in balls in your court and then you'll review it. You'll say, I don't like this. You'll put it back in their court. And you just, it's kind of this iterative process rather than, you know, the traditional project moving in a waterfall type method. This is, it's very cyclical. It goes back and forth, back and forth. And at the end of the day, you know, you have something that looks great. But overall, yeah, I mean, we were fortunate enough to find a company here to do it.
And it's one company doing both design and development?
Yes. Yep.
Interesting. It looks beautiful. I can't wait to see how it works.
Yeah, we're excited to get we have how-to videos coming out. What we've been finding, we're just doing passive marketing right now, you know, on social media, just throwing a lot of stuff out there for people and getting our name out there. What we don't want, you know, when we do market people, I hate being the first time they see you. You know, I don't like, you know, just coming out of the blue. But if somebody says, oh, yeah, I've seen that logo before. I've heard of that. You know, I want that to be what happens when we actually go show them something, because then we have something to show them rather than, you know, hey, come join us, sign up for this now, and you know, we got nothing to give you because it's not ready.
Right. Well, that's how I found you. You know, I saw you on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I saw that you followed me. I started following back. We started retweeting stuff and kind of just recognizing existence, and then Alex called and said, let's talk about this, and I liked it so much I wanted to bring it on the podcast and share it with the rest of you.
I'm surprised, you know, as an engineer, as a 31-year-old engineer, I didn't have Twitter before Paven, and then, you know, we were looking at our different traction channels of how we were going to, you know, get the word out. And you know, like I said, we're doing passive right now, so LinkedIn is huge for us. If you're not following us on LinkedIn, please do that. But I was surprised at how Twitter people are so nice. I don't understand it. It's like you could say anything. Everybody's like, yeah, I like that. I agree with that. So it's a great way to meet people informally and not have the, you know, LinkedIn is more, I don't want to use the word stuffy, but I'm going to. It's more conservative in its approach to reaching out to people than what LinkedIn is, or excuse me, than what Twitter is. It's been very positive for us. I mean, we've made a ton of connections through there that I would have never thought possible, but for no other platform than Twitter.
Yeah, there definitely is a each social platform has its own use and its own demographic, and certainly the family that we have on Twitter, the architecture and engineering family that has connected on Twitter, is powerful. They are very nice people, and a lot of them have become my friends over the years. And when we go to conventions, like we just came back from AIA convention in Philadelphia, we all meet up and we hang out, and mm-hmm. it's a powerful tool, and it's a powerful tool for business as well. So when is your expectation on launch?
Well, we are in we're in testing mode right now. We're going through finding things that we want to either take out, to, like I said, make the transition to somebody using something new, just as completely basic as possible, because I don't like throwing things into people's face. It's no different than hiring a greenhorn and, you know, saying, oh, let's throw you on this structural software program that you've never used before. You know, I want people to go and be comfortable with it, be easy to navigate. So we're trying to do our best right now. We're actually pulling things out, or turning those features off, so that way we can make the transition easier. I would say an estimate probably be done with testing mid-June. I don't want to rush it.
Yes. So sometime this summer.
Absolutely. I would tell you this. One of the for anybody else out there that's looking to start an AE firm, and if they're listening to you, they're already got a good leg up. Take as much advice from people as you can get. I mean, take it all with a grain of salt, but take as much advice from people. Don't be afraid to ask for help, because people are so willing to give you advice when you're doing something that they've already conquered or achieved. And it's usually very, very good. And the technology world is the exact same. So I think that's universal across. You know, when we started this Paven, people would reach out from other technology businesses that are operating within our same space, but not competitors. You know, they have the same target demographic, you know, that we're looking to find. And, you know, giving us advice, you know, they've been in it for a year or 5 or 10, and they're saying, you know, this is what I wish I would have done more of, you know, when we first launched, you know. And so they give you that advice, and you take it in. And as a 27-year-old starting an AE firm, if it weren't for the mentors that I had before that, you know, telling me all of these things, you know, there's no way I would be in the position I am today. So I highly recommend taking, you know, getting as much and asking for as much advice as you possibly can.
That's very, very good advice. Let's end it with that. The internet website for Paven is paven.com. It's paeven.com. The LinkedIn page that you had mentioned is linkedin.com/company/Paven. That'll take you to the company page for Paven on LinkedIn. On Twitter, it's Jared's Twitter handle is PavenJared, J-A-R-E-D, and PavenBuzz, also on Twitter. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the general Twitter handle for everybody. So I would say follow both of them. And if you want to reach out to Jared to ask questions, you just talked about, you know, how important it is to ask questions and sort of connect with others. Reach out on LinkedIn or Twitter and ask him how he did it or why he did it or whether you should do it. I think that's how I got to where I am. That's clearly what Jared is saying. He has been his success story, so do that. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/Paven. It's there. So, Jared, thank you very much for your service to the professions of both architecture and engineering. And thank you for sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to this Best of Entree Architect Podcast episode. This is one of my favorite shows, and I hope you enjoyed hearing it again. And if it's your first time, welcome. Welcome to the Entree Architect Podcast. And remember that Entree Architect Academy is opening its doors in September 2016. That's just a few weeks away. If you're interested in joining over 100 of your fellow entrepreneur architects for live training, digital courses, business documents, and a thriving private community of small groups meeting weekly on video conference and daily in our member forum, head on over to entrearchitect.com/academy and sign up for our early bird mailing list. We'll keep you updated on our progress, and we may even give you some inside information on how to join early at a special early bird price. So go sign up right now at entrearchitect.com/academy. My name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.